When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the Whitetail Podcast. I'm Paul Chapman, joined by our Canuck beat writer, Ben Kuzman, our columnist, Ed Willis. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hey, Paul.
Good day.
I will give you a reminder to subscribe to our Whitetail Podcast through Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating if you like it. Send us suggestions. You can also catch our videos on our website, theprovince.com, vancouversun.com. Check out our social channels on Facebook as well, where you will get all this great stuff. Guys, I don't know where to start. I guess we have to start with this train that the Canucks are on, was scoring so many goals and everyone waiting for them to come back down to earth, as we've seen in the last couple of years. I throw it open to both of you. What's behind this? Why is this year looking different than other years?
Well, it's a product of the way they play and with the pace and their penchant for forechecking, turning pucks over, making things happen. It's come to a point, Paul, and you bring up a great point about this train and whether it's going to derail or not. And because we're getting older, I needed to write some things down, okay? And Ed, you can relate. I just want to give people a bit of an idea of what's going on here. The Canucks are the 10th team since 89-90 to score at least 28 goals in their first five home games. First team to do that was the Nords in 89-90. The last was the Bolts in 2012-2013, so that's significant. The Canucks are the fourth team in the last 30 years to manage five-goal periods, multiple five-goal periods, and that hasn't happened since the 2011 team. And, of course, five or more goals in three straight games, we haven't seen that since they chased the Cup. So it's amazing to me that when you look at goal differential in the NHL right now, the Canucks are right at the top. They're the fourth team in offense. We remember them to be 26, 26, 28, pick a number. So here we are today. A lot of it's predicated on the way the game's going. But, I'll go back to the thing that it's amazing how this team thinks it's getting its offense because they're so hard to play against in the offensive zone.
That research is unbelievable. We have to charge extra for that. Isn't there a special category people would have to subscribe to get that? I think you gave it away too cheap.
That's why we brought in a third mic.
I'm putting it on my expenses, okay?
I really do.
Hello.
It's almost disorienting. I don't know how you feel about it, Ben, but it is, and you have to kind of, you're just kind of used to having that bitch factor in your writing, and because that's been the case over the last 3-4 years. Or you felt like, oh, God, I'm forcing this, because somebody had a decent week or somebody had a bit of promise. But there's just so many positive stories. Every time you walk into that locker room, you could go, you could do one on Jordy Benn. There's six defensemen. He's been exactly what the doctor ordered. Just up and down the lineup. So, you just hope because there's that little voice in the back of your mind. We've seen this movie before. They've gotten off to good starts in years past. What's different this time? I think everybody knows they're a better team, but are they good enough to sustain this into February, into March, into the first week in April?
Ed, I wanted to ask you specifically about ownership because that's been, when we've done podcasts over the last few years, especially since this team collapsed after the Cup run, it's not just that they're winning, it's that they're scoring these goals. I mean, you could implement a Dallas Stars type system where you're trapping and you're getting results and you're winning games 2-1 or 1-0, but the ownership that we know how much they pay attention to the bells and whistles on this team, they have to be thrilled with the way this team's playing, as well as not just getting points.
It's astonishing to me how much the conversation has changed around this team in the space of one off season, and that goes from the GM Jim Benning to his assistant John Weisbrod to ownership, because they were all kind of on notice. They were treading on thin ice. I mean, they've gassed, you know, resident icon Trevor Linden because he didn't think they were near ready to make this step, but here they are. So, I mean, you've got to, at the end of the day, they've got scoreboard. You have to tip your hat to them and acknowledge that they have really, in the short term, turned this franchise around and made it an exciting, entertaining, put on a product for fans to embrace.
And Ed talks about, you know, sustainability, Paul, which I think is really important here. I mean, what usually happens in November? This team crashes on the road because they'll have that invariable 5 or 6 game road trip. I didn't have Tyler Mott in my injury pool, so we know he's out with the foot hairline fracture. But that's the thing. I mean, they've checked all the boxes. Great goaltending. Nobody's hurt. Balanced scoring, like you said, Ed. We're not looking at that one line. What's Pettersson's line going to do tonight? If they don't do anything, they're screwed. Well, what about the Horvat line and that crazy fourth line that's been able to match up? I think Travis Green had the greatest line about the fourth line. He says, I don't have to hide them, because usually it's 4 versus 4. And I know on the last road trip in Detroit, and, of course, home team having last change, they wanted the Larkin's line out there against Beagle's line, and they just ate them up. They just ate them up, and they relish that. And, of course, we talked earlier about Tim Schaller having 4 goals in 3 games. He's already equaled last year. So, like you said, there's a certain buzz about this team. And, you know, it was right from the get-go in training camp. The off-season acquisitions were legit. There was some symmetry through the lines, and the back end needed a remake. Bet more than you could do at IKEA, fix that mess. So here we are today, a team that, knock on wood, hasn't had a serious injury to one of its premier players and is getting great goaltending. And I'm just anxious to see. There's a big road trip coming out east in later in November, and I think that's going to be the litmus test to see how they reset at U.S. Thanksgiving.
Ed, I'll ask you about the off-season acquisitions, because, I mean, the wailing and gnashing of teeth over how much they paid for Tyler Myers, and there were a huge segment of fans didn't want this guy. They're overpaying for him. Giving up a first-round pick for Miller, that's, you know, people, you talk about the reset. And going into the season, people were exasperated at Jim Benning and the job he'd done. But really, it has. You know, Ben mentioned Jordy Benn. And you just look at all the offseason acquisitions and you go, they are all fitting seamlessly, which has been the most important move for you.
I'm not sure if you can pick one piece out. If you held a gun to my head, I'd say JT Miller, because he's given them a presence on the first line that they've been lacking. And having said that, him and Myers hit the tape at about the same place. I don't know about you, Ben, but I didn't mind the Myers contract. You overpay for those guys in UFA. He's probably technically not a $6 million defenseman, maybe 5'5", something like that. But I didn't go, oh, man, they got fleeced on that one. They got an able body who would fit into their top four. Now, he's been a little more than that. He's given them, to me, a top-end pairing with Adler. And, you know, picking up on what Ben said, I still think, you know, when I was looking at the start of the year and kind of, to me, the sort of top three things that had to happen for this team was, one, the goaltending had to held up. I thought the second most important thing was, can Chris Tanev and Alex Edler stay healthy? Can they get 70 games, not together, but out of both of them? And then the third thing is how fast these young guys are going to develop. That's where we are now. I mean, everything is kind of unspooling perfectly in the Canucks world. And you're right. There's going to come a moment where it's going to be tested, where they'll run into where Chris Tanev will block a slap shot, where something funny will happen. And that's when we'll find out, you know, really the level of substance in this team.
Isn't it interesting, though, because don't you think the Jets would want to do over now with Trouba going to the Rangers, Bufflin unsure whether he's going to play? Suddenly it's a tire fire in their back end. They got Myers at market value. And I think that's really imperative. And, you know, the interesting thing about Miller, I give the organization credit for doing its homework. I mean, he was stuck on the third line in Tampa. He scored 13 goals. He wasn't going to get a lot of ice time. They had a cap crunch situation. They had to move him. They had to pay point, give him the money. But he did have a pair of back-to-back 22-goal years with the Rangers. He's played for AV. He's played for Torts. He's been through, as they say, some stuff. So I was impressed, just like you said, Ed, how hard he plays. I mean, he says, yeah, I skate pretty good for a 215-pound guy because he's wide. He's thick. You see that in the room. And he's given them something that line was missing. Ferland, the whole Ferland situation was miscast from the get-go. I thought when they made the trade for Miller, he was going to play with Pettersson. To say Ferland was going to play with Pettersson and Besser, suddenly you're asking a guy who scored 21 goals a couple of years ago to kind of tailor his game where he has to maintain pace with those guys. Having said that, though, last game, Ferland setting up two goals, primary assists, looking like he can be a fit. And right now, he is a third-line player on this team. He needs to be good in transition. But Miller, man, he's a better player than I thought he was.
Yeah, 100%.
You guys have both talked about, like, okay, we know what's coming, the injuries, things are going to get rocky for the Canucks here. But isn't part of the story for this team this year also that if you look at at Utica, everyone is talking about how dominant this team is and the fact that you have legit NHLers who can come up. I know Goldobin is one of those names that just draws such different reactions from Canuck fans. But overall, if you look at if something bad does happen to this team on the injury front, they have options, which they haven't had for, I don't know, 5-6 years.
Yeah, and options that can be sustained over the short term. Now, if you lose your number one center, your top pairing defensive guy for 30 games, that's going to make an impact. But you look at the options available to them. If a winger goes down, they bring Sven Berchi up, who's, you know, looks for most of his career has been about a 20-goal scorer. They're thereabouts, a 15-20-goal scorer. That's a pretty good option. Cole Lind is over a point a game there. So, you know, we're getting some good news on the prospect front, too, after you know, most people viewed last season as a lost season for Lind. Olli Juolevi is down there kind of, you know, developing at his own pace. And, you know, I fully expect him to play games in the NHL this season. So, again, coming back to the job Benning did in the offseason, it's kind of the ripple effect of the moves he made at the NHL level. But there is depth in the organization now that we haven't seen in a long time here.
Yeah, suddenly it's not to take anything away from him, but it's not recalling Zach McEwen when somebody gets hurt. And I think it's a win-win situation for the Canucks because, let's be honest, right now Berchi and Goldobin are not going to play in your top six. But they're off to this great start, Goldie Player of the Week in the American Hockey League. Some other teams may think, you know what, maybe we can flip him a draft pick and take a run at these guys, because I think Goldie is what he is. You know, he's kind of the Reed Boucher. He plays well in the American League, and something's amiss at this level. And quite frankly, we know Berchi's situation. He's one more big hit away from, and he'd be a third-line guy on this team right now. So I think two great things. Yes, you're right. When they have to recall a guy, it's a legit guy who can play at this level. Or somebody's thinking, you know what, maybe look at that guy playing well with Utica. Maybe we should take a chance. Maybe we'll flip the Canucks a draft pick. So I think it works on both levels.
When you guys have both referenced also the young players, and we know that that's where if this team is to ever truly contend for a cup, it's going to be on the backs of those guys that they've had high draft picks with. But it struck me this season that Quinn Hughes has fit in so well without being the story, right? When Besser came in, it was like, that's all we talked about for years, MVP, the All-Star game. And then he gets hurt. And then Pettersson last year, we knew what happened. It was like everyone was just in love with Elias Pettersson. This year, Quinn Hughes is playing exceptionally well, but there are all these other storylines, so there's not so much focus on him. Does that matter?
I just think it's we've been hearing about Quinn Hughes forever, even before they drafted him. You know, this kid with the national program, this kid at the University of Michigan, a kid that Jeff Tambellini labeled Bobby Orr-like. So I just think when he came to this level and we saw it was almost like, okay, you know, we've seen it on the clips and now we're seeing it in person. And I think a great spinoff of that, talking about Chris Tanev, two things at play. Chris Tanev is a mad scientist who lengthened his shin pads because if there was a puck that was going to hit the part of a body where there was no protection, it was going to hit Chris Tanev. So Chris Tanev, the training staff, and some, as they say, outside sources have constructed these shin pads that are covering more of his leg, which is great. But the second part, the more interesting part that plays into Quinn Hughes, he's not spending as much time in his own zone. You know, Hughes has the puck and he's gone. And give Chris Tanev credit. You can't just throw the kid the puck and stand there. You have to be able to maintain some sort of pace with him. Again, like Paul said, there's these other underlying stories. Hughes is a great one. But Chris Tanev, knock on wood, is a pretty good one, too.
Well, just to sort of take out the wide-angle lens on that point, like, remember when they got Louis Eriksson? Like, he was the shiny new toy. We got this 30-goal score, and he's going to help turn this franchise around. Well, it didn't work out, and now, you know, people
are you sure about that? Yeah. Sure? There's still time. Still a couple years left on that contract.
That's a little things really
so,
well.
And there was a little bit of a ripple when Ferland gone off to a slow start, but like, who cares? They were winning. It was just kind of like it was talk radio talk. That's really all it is, you know. Canucks fans need something to fret about, and Ferland supplied that for about 2 weeks. But I think that's the other part of this is you can't really pick out one guy or two guys and say, boy, their whole season revolves around whether or not this guy can get it done. There's kind of a, you know, there's kind of a collective there now, which seems meaningful and I think can withstand the rigors of the 82-game schedule, which is always the bottom line of an NHL team. With the Canucks, we just haven't seen it because there's so many young players, right? So we don't know if Pettersson can do this over 82 games, if Hughes can do it over 82 games, if Besser can be as much of a factor in the games that matter in March and April as he is in the games in October and November. And that's what I'm really excited to find out about this team.
If they were struggling right now, we'd be talking about Bo Horvat playing 15 minutes against the Florida Panthers instead of 20. What's going on here? How come that's the captain? Why is he only – it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. He doesn't kill penalties. They didn't have a lot of power play time last game. But 15 minutes for a guy who's accustomed to playing 19 to 20, who played 24 earlier in this year in the game in Jersey, that would be a story right now. Sure. But it's not a story because of depth. It's not like, why is Horvat playing between those two guys? Well, you know, what's going on with Horvat? We're not worried about that. And that's A, talent, and B, that's depth.
So, I mean, aside from us debating, you know, who's going to be left out in the Hart Trophy finalists, seeing as we've anointed this team one of the 10 greatest in the history of hockey already. Injuries aside, where do you see the pitfalls for this team? What do they still have to improve on, and what could be their downfall, do you think, moving forward?
For me, it's the young kids. Is Elias Pettersson at 21 ready to lead this team into the playoffs? Is Brock Besser really an elite goal scorer? Can Quinn Hughes... will he be a Calder Trophy finalist? That's asking a lot. Like Hughes, I think, just turned 20, right? Pettersson is 21, Besser 22. They're really at the embryonic stages of their career. We don't know what they're going to be when they're fully formed. But right here, right now, they've got to go a long way towards driving the engine. Now they've got some help. You know, we've referenced all the help they have. But a lot of it still comes down to how well they perform. And that, to me, that's an unknown.
And it's interesting, too, now with having Miller able to take draws, Pettersson's not taking faceoffs. And you can read what you want into that, but I think it's significant. It's another part of his game he doesn't have to worry about. And Ed brings up a great point. So you talked to Pettersson at the end of last year. He was gassed. He admitted it. And the last road trip, the 3-4 games that ended in Madison Square Garden, Quinn Hughes admitted he was gassed. You're not accustomed to playing that kind of a schedule. College, it's weekend games, and you practice all week. But the way
throw
he
the
was,
World Juniors,
yeah,
in his
and the
mix
way he,
too.
And the way he was able to rebound, though, right after that, he was really impressed me. It's a legitimate concern. Guys are not accustomed to playing 82 games and a lot of tough road trips. But I think they learned from it. Again, getting back to Pettersson, the fact that I just think he's made the adjustments now, taking pucks at speed through the neutral zone, and you see him. He's thicker. He's thicker in the neck and the shoulders, and he's able to stand his ground better when he does have the puck. So, but I think it's a legitimate concern. How will the young guys stand up? Because we know how hard it is to play in the second half of the season.
If you look at those the President's Trophy winning teams, I think that not only were they blessed with having so much top end talent, led by the Sedins, obviously, but there was a certain chemistry with that team that they all seemed to get along. Are you seeing that a little bit? I know it's easy to read so much into Instagram posts of them in their Halloween costumes, but there does seem to be almost like a boy band element to this young group that all seem to get along well and like to be around each other.
I think one of the things, and I did like about this much level of research, and I know this is a podcast, and you can't see me holding my fingers about a half an inch apart. But I was curious to see the number of Canucks draft picks compared to other teams, and I didn't really get out of their division. Okay, the point I'm going to make here, if it kills me, is the number of players that have been drafted and developed within the organization and to the degree to which they form a lot of the identity of this team. So we're talking about, now we're talking about Patterson, we're talking about Hughes, we're talking about Besser, we're talking about Jacob Markstrom is largely a Canuck. I know he was drafted by Florida, but he's now been in this organization for how many, you know, 6 years, whatever it is. Edler is a Canuck, Tanev is a Canuck. So there is, I think there is something there. And I remember something Jim Devolano told me a million years ago, and he said, it's just different when you draft and develop your own guys. It's a different feel in the organization, and it kind of permeates right down through the locker room, but also like the head office, the coaches. Everybody feels like they're a part of it. Everybody feels like they've got some ownership in it, and I think the Canucks are kind of there right now.
The best thing to happen to Elias Pettersson was his friendship with Brock Besser. I mean, they're inseparable. And really, if you think about it, you're a Swedish kid. You come to a country. You're grasping the language better, but you know, opening a bank account and renting a place. I mean, Besser kind of took him under his wing. And it's not just that part. They're not just line mates. They're real good friends. Yeah. You see them on the road. They're inseparable. They always go for dinner. They're comparable in age. But I think that's a really important part. And you bring up a great point, Ed, about the fact that they are, you know, draft choices. But there's a feeling in the room. You know, you get the Walmart greeter and Jay Beagle. He'll greet you at the door and talk for 47 minutes on game day about his experiences with the Stanley Cup champ.
He was unbelievable yesterday. Unbelievable. He might still be talking.
He could be still. Yeah. You need fresh batteries in your recorder when you talk to Beagle. But there is that kind of sense in the room that, you know, Horvat may be the captain, but there are a number of leaders in that room. There's an interesting new wave of younger guys who are very mature for their age. And a lot of that, you know, even comes back to Horvat right from day one, how accountable and amiable and respectful he was of everybody. So I've been in that room a lot, and I think the vibe in there is as good as it's ever been.
Again, you got to walk before you can run. But if with this being the 50th season, we're doing a lot of revisiting over the Canucks' history, and people don't just want a good team. They want a cup, right? You saw St. Louis last year get over the hump. So this team has to make the playoffs first, and we have to see progress over a whole year. But, you know, everything we are talking about is pointing the right way. When you look at teams like Calgary and Tampa that had great regular seasons but got absolutely sandbagged in the playoffs, how is this team built to really compete for a championship? Like, what else do you think they have to look to add to this team? You talk about this great mix of youth and skill and veteran leadership, and they got four lines, but is there anywhere that you think this team really needs to still add pieces to legitimately contend for a Stanley Cup in two or three years?
Teams still need that sandpaper element, and it's not really, it's got nothing to do with toughness. It just kind of that sort of grit factor, the ability to grow a legitimate playoff beard. I think these are all factors, and I think St. Louis underscored that last year with the team they had and the players they have. I know the game is trending in a different way, but the game hasn't evolved that much where you don't need that element on your team, and you still have to be able to play it. When you have to play a heavy game, you have to play an heavy game. When you have to show some toughness, you have to show some toughness. You have to be able to play it all different ways, and that usually requires an element of maturity that this team might be lacking right now. That's the only thing I can think of off the top of my head.
You need the skill level to get you through the regular season. I mean, the game has trended that way. It's fast, it's skilled, but the irony, it's the only professional league where the game changes dramatically in the postseason. So what did the St. Louis Blues do last year? The previous season, they missed the playoffs by 1 point. They got O'Reilly. They got Perron. They got Bozak. They got guys who were hard to play against because they already had the skill level. The Canucks will eventually get to a point where they do have the skill level to get to the postseason, but to take that next big step, that's where you have to maybe add a certain element, because there's no sport in the postseason like the NHL where you touch the puck, you're on your ass, and they don't call anything. And it's a real tricky process, and the Blues handled it really well because they had the skill and they added the right guy.
Well, don't Ben and Ferland somewhat?
Yeah,
they
add
should.
Some of that.
That's why they got him. That's a great point, Paul. That's exactly it. I mean, Travis Green says, you know, Ferland's going to be a very important guy for us, and it's not just the tough matchups against tough teams during the regular season. If we get there, we need that crazy Ferland from 2015 to be driving the other team crazy and be productive as well.
And Miller's another guy that can play it any way you want. And you know, we've talked about him, and he is impressive. He is, and he's an interesting cat. Like, I mean, you look at him and you think, geez, he's got to be late 20s, early 30s. Well, he just turned 26. Yeah. And so he's got a bit of a presence in that room because it's such a younger team, but it's not like he's like one of the old guys. So I think, you know, that's why it's such a good fit. Pettersson and Besser can defer to him, and I think they do just because of his the experience factor and some of the things he's been through. But it's not like he's like, you know, occupies a different world than they do. So I think there's a like that there's compatibility there, and I think, you know, I think it's reflected in the chemistry that line shown.
He's
so
got
far.
Some bite too.
He's got
Bit of Bertuzzi. I'm not the bad Bertuzzi, but he's got a little bit of bird in him. He's got a little bit of bite.
There's a number of ways I could take that. But one thing I wanted to ask both of you about was the coach. So even last year when the team was having some success, you know, I've just seen Travis Green as a guy. You look at his interactions with the media, you look at the way he responds to certain questions. I didn't think this was a guy who would foster a team. Ben, you talked about it off the top, about the system they're playing and the pressure that they put on. I thought this was a guy who would rather win games 2-1 than be scoring 5 and 7 goals. What have you seen in the coach now that he has these new ingredients, playing a little bit more of an aggressive style?
I like a coach that sees what he has and then tries to tailor a system to benefit. It's one thing to say, let's play hard. I mean, the Edmonton Oilers are winning because what are they playing? They're playing Dave Tippett hockey. I mean, yeah, they'll have their outbursts, but basically they've got four guys who can score, the Oilers, and the rest of it is one-goal games. I think, to Travis's credit, having been a player who somehow played 970 games in the NHL and played at every conceivable level, understands that at some point you have to take a hard look at what you have, and you tailor your players to a system, or do you take a system and force it on your players? I like the fact that when you talk to guys on the team, they know they have the green light to go, as long as they're responsible. Jake Virtanen has only been on the ice for 3 even goals against this year. That's amazing to me. And that is, I mean, if there's a capital project, it's always been Jake Virtanen. And maybe that's the culmination of what Travis has tried to get through to him, the pace he's playing at now on the Horvat line, and a coach understanding that this guy can skate. He's got the tools. Sometimes we don't know if he's got a toolbox, but he can hit like there's no tomorrow. He can skate and get to the net. And to take all those elements and put him with guys who can complement him and he can complement them, I think that's a credit to the coach to say, I got to put my players in the right positions to succeed as opposed to just nailing them into a system.
Ed, if you look at this coach, I mean, again, the NHL is famous for firing coaches too quickly, and they swing back and forth of, well, we want a guy who's had success and he's a young, smart coach, or we want a guy who's had experience. It seems like there's no blueprint. But how much has Travis Green been learning on the job with this team? Because he seems to have really grown into it with this group.
Well, I think that point I made about this, you know, having like a real Canucks feel to it, like with Canucks players. And I think Travis Green belongs in that conversation. 4 years in the organization in Utica, now in his third year as the coach. I don't ever want to say a coach got a free pass, because it's professional hockey and there's always pressure to win. But the first 2 years, there was always kind of a presumption. He got the most he could out of that lineup, and no reasonable person could have expected more. But now we're seeing him with, you know, like real options and a lineup that's flexible and he can use in multiple different ways. And I know we have to keep reminding yourself we're talking about 11 games here, not 60. But he seems to, again, be drawing the most out of it. And you can tell by the way they play. There is a script there, and everybody is bought into it, because I don't see much, Ben, do you? I don't see much deviation from the way they play from night to night. Sometimes it doesn't always work, but I think the game plan is always the same from night to night.
And, to be honest, I mean, you're right. The bloom is off the rose in terms of, okay, this is a guy that was going to be the head coach here eventually. In year 3, they better be playing meaningful games in early April. Yep. I mean, whether they make the playoffs or not, I don't think it's critical for Travis's tenure. But I think the organization is at a point now where they have enough young guys who need to experience the postseason. Even if they get punted in the first round, they can't keep talking about it. They've got to get there. I mean, Horvat was fortunate enough to do it in his first year. They've got to get there. And I think the optics of one and out don't matter as much as taking that next step as an organization, and now's the time.
So we'll finish up here. We are 1 month away, gentlemen, from the vaunted U.S. Thanksgiving benchmark. What are we talking about with this team in a month?
Well, I, like Ben said, you know, they've got that big Eastern road trip, and that always seems to have been something of a tipping point in Canucks seasons past. It's where the injuries start to accumulate. It's where the games start getting a little tougher. It's where their lack of depth has started to show. So that'll be the first great test. But the thing is, when you're going to occupy the territory the Canucks have set out for themselves, it never ends. You just, and I don't see, like, in the Western Conference this year, where they can afford a 5-6 game losing streak and expect to still be relevant in the playoff picture. You've got to avoid those huge troughs, and hopefully you hit some peaks along the way. But that's the one I'll be looking forward to, how they respond to those series of games.
February 2nd last year in Denver, they win a big game. They're in a playoff position. And then the injuries hit. Yeah. There was the Edler situation in Philadelphia with the facial injury. Demko gets hurt in a warm-up. Berchi suddenly have concussion-like symptoms again. At the U.S. Thanksgiving, I think they're going to be – I'll say they're in the third position in the Pacific Division. I'll say it's going to be Vegas, Calgary, and I think the Canucks will come out of that. But how they respond after that, I think they've played some of their best hockey on the road. So I'll give them third spot in the division coming out of that tough Eastern trip. Because I think it's going to be the litmus test, and I think they really respond well to challenges on the road.
Okay, I think we'll leave it there. Thanks to both Ben and Ed for joining us this week with their expertise. You can subscribe to this podcast through Apple Podcasts. Check out our videos, thevancouversun.com, theprovince.com. Thanks to our producer, Juanita Ng, and we will be back with you next week. Thanks, everyone.